ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 ॐ नमो भगवते
Terrorism. I want to speak about terrorism. Devotees are all smiling. I'm smiling. If you were in Boston, Massachusetts, USA, you probably wouldn't be smiling when we discuss, because people take it very seriously there, as there has recently been a terrorist attack in Boston, which took away, I believe, three lives and some legs and arms of people who are still living. So we're not much concerned about it sitting here in Salem, Tamil Nadu, India, because it hasn't happened here yet. And not much in South India. Quite a few years ago, there was a series of bomb blasts in Coimbatore. Quite a lot of people were killed in that. But apart from that, there hasn't been that much of what's identified as terrorism in South India. But life in the modern world is increasingly affected by terrorism. And every day in the newspaper or news, what's it called? It's not a paper anymore, and then you get it on the internet, the news screen, whatever. You see, every day there's terrorism in Pakistan, Afghanistan, there's always something. Kashmir. The recent event in Boston got a lot of publicity, even though relatively few people were killed there because it was in America. And America, which, or the Western news media, prioritizes Western events of terrorism. So terrorism is derived from the word terror. You won't find the word terrorism in Srila Prabhupada's books, because the concept hadn't really become part of modern life at that time. I believe the first skyjack, as it was called, was done at the Olympic Games in Munich, which it was at 72, when Palestinian terrorists killed all the Israeli athletes and then hijacked a plane and got away. And so that was sensational. But even before that, there'd been in Germany, the Baader-Meinhof gang the whole concept of terrorism, it really became part of the psyche of modern man, or it only started to become when Srila Prabhupada was already in the later part of his preaching in the Western world. But now it's endemic. The word terrorism, it's derived obviously from the word terror. So terror means fear. There are different kinds of fear. There's apprehension, fear of being disliked by others, but this means terror is the kind of fear, just like you have horror movies, and there's the terror of being in a situation where there's nothing you can do about it, and you're subject to the worst possible things, and people are out to get you, and it's just completely horrible. And what adds to it is the fact that it's out of your control. And terrorism generally strikes in places where it's not expected. That's how they get away with it. recently, the last Olympic Games in London, they had tremendous security arrangements with army men posted with bazookas or something like that. I guess bazookas are out of date. On high buildings in London to offset the possibility of aerial terrorism, that someone might somehow or other get a plane and drop something. So tremendous security arrangements, and there was no terrorist attack. But it's when you're not expecting it that they tend to attack. That's how they get away with it. And that also adds to it, because just like at the Boston Marathon, where there was the recent bombing, it's a nice thing, you know, people go and it's all, everyone's in a good mood, and people come even from Europe to join the marathon, to run in the race. And it's, you know, it's there's some competition, but it's not, it's all in a good spirit. And then all of a sudden, there's terrorism. And much of the terrorism, like I said, nowadays it's almost daily in Pakistan and Afghanistan. It's often done at marriages. What could be more cruel than that? And at religious gatherings, mostly Sunnis targeting Shias. So it's, you know, you come together to celebrate a wedding, such a nice thing. You come to pray together, and all of a sudden there's this terror. So it's an apt word, terrorism, which in Indian languages has various terms. Ugravad. Vad literally means a theory, but it's the theory of ugra, which means, well, that literally means extremism, a bad extremism. And there's also antakavadi, means it. Atakavadi. Atankavadi. What does that mean? Antaka means the death. And that's a Hindi upper Bronx. Means killing people. That's what it's a Hindi upper Bronx. Yeah. So the philosophy of killing people to get what you want. So what is the Krishna conscious outlook on terrorism? Well, it's the same in many ways as that of many other people who don't like it. It's sickly, it's cowardly, it's killing people. Usually the people who are killed are people who have no overt enmity toward the attackers. Just like in the Boston Marathon. And what the people running there, they didn't have anything intrinsically against whoever the people bombing them stood for. And what exactly they stand for, you don't even know. So it's cowardly in the sense that there's nothing brave. And there's something brave about having a regular war with two armies facing each other. But terrorists don't do that. And guerrilla warfare, which was already quite in vogue by the 1960s when Prabhupada came to the West, that also, it's hide and shoot. So both guerrilla warfare and terrorism, they work on the principle that we're up against an enemy who we can't fight directly. We're outnumbered and outpowered, so we have to adopt other means, covert means. And it's kill and run, or in many cases, suicide bombers, kill and die. So it doesn't make sense. It's a crime against humanity, and all that is right and proper and good in the world. Anyone will agree. Actually, not everyone agrees. The terrorists, they don't agree. When the Twin Towers came down famously on September the 11th, 2001, the World Trade Center, There was widespread celebration in the what can be called the Islamic world. Because, well, they have a completely different outlook. Their outlook is that, well, America's causing all the problems in Palestine, and good for them. Good for the terrorists that the Americans are making so much fuss about, but they've killed so many more of our people. So I don't know if everyone celebrated, but there was widespread celebration. They thought it was a good thing. That's a very serious problem in itself, isn't it? That people can think like that. I mean, terrorism in itself is bad, but the mentality behind it is that's more terrifying, because then there's no end to it. I'll discuss that a bit more. So what to do about it? How to stop it? Well, widespread security, just like in London, the Olympic Games. The Olympic Games is an ideal target for terrorism, because many people they come together, and it's high profile. The whole world is centered on it. At least that's what they say. But I'm sure many people in Bangladesh villages didn't even hear about the Olympic Games, had nothing to do with them, and what to speak of African villages. And there may have been many people in the West also who weren't interested, just like when I was a kid, I never had any interest in the Olympic Games. World Cup soccer, yes, but not Olympic Games. So, but anyway, it's a high-profile event, and if you want to get your message across, then it's a good time to bomb, poison, blow up, or whatever. So there is high security. And there are increased security measures at airports, for instance. We don't hear of plane hijackings anymore after 9/11. And there may have been, but it's been very few. So increased security measures. Be suspicious of anyone who's behaving unusually. And probably better to be suspicious even more of people who are behaving usually. But then you have to be suspicious of everyone. And you can't trust anyone. But you can't really stop it. You can punish the criminals. Obviously, if you catch them, you can punish them. But killing them, it's like the hydra-headed monster, who you cut off the heads and more come up. Cut off one head and another 10 heads come up. So it actually gives fuel to the syndrome of terrorism, because people think it's noble to die for the cause. So obviously the criminals have to be punished, but the punishment, it doesn't stop the problem. And if you don't punish them, they'll just go on doing it. So it's like it's Stephen Covey's defeated. There's no win-win here. It's all whatever you do, it's all losing. Be interesting to ask Stephen Covey what his solution is for terrorism. What is the solution? That's what we should be thinking. What is the solution? There's nothing to do, it seems, but just to try and check it. But you can't fully stop it. Unless, I believe it was it Bush who said, or someone in America said shortly after 9/11, that we to fully stop it, we'd have to change our whole lifestyle, our whole way of life, the open, free society. But even in societies which are highly controlled, there's still terrorism there also, in the police states or whatever you call it. So what is the solution? With the open, free, liberal society, people are, as it's called, people are free to go here and there. So you can't, if you curtail the freedom of people, then you might be, and make it, have checks at every stop, just like when I went to Sri Lanka, and we're driving from the west coast to the east coast, and again and again and again, there were checks on the road, and you'd get stopped and checked again and again and again. So, you can do that, but that would go against the whole tradition that's evolved in the Western world of freedom, freedom of the individual. And people are very suspicious of that also, that then you become, there's so much checking and controlling, and then you just become a police state with no freedom whatsoever. So it apart from the immediate problem of terrorism, so many problems are posed, and how to deal with it. We just have to learn to live with it, or what's going on? What should be done? Ironically, it's the free society that's fueling much of the terror, because this terrorism, it's not just an extension of hooliganism. Now, you don't have these words probably in India, that you don't see hooliganism. Hooligan, the word, means someone who just performs violent acts with no real reason. The word came into being from the hooligan family. There's an Irish family who had come to live in England, and they were hooligans. Just like you have the word savage, it comes from a class of people who invaded England, and they were savage. So the word, and barbarian comes from the barbar, not people who cut your head, but a class of people who, well, they cut your head. No, they're not shaving your head, but cutting your head. So, hooligan means someone who's just violent for fun, but they don't. Just like we have football hooligans, and at least they didn't used to kill people. Mostly they don't kill, they just fight for fun. It's just like a British pastime. If you get drunk and you fight or you smash some windows. Smashing window, that's called vandalism. Again, it comes from a class of people who invaded England at one time, the Vandals. So, hooliganism, it's a certain class of people, usually young boys in their teens who are just got some excess energy to burn off, and they're not very cultured or well-behaved. But terrorism's not, it's not just people who have got, they're just feeling a little bit bad with the world, but they have a whole... Most of them actually have some kind of ideology behind it. And, of course, there has been Christian terrorism, Hindu terrorism, Sikh terrorism, but terrorism in the world today is largely linked with Islam. And although it's arguable that Islam is not in and of itself a violent religion, it's known as the religion of peace, and it's also arguable that it is, it has in its philosophy, but it's arguable both ways. Some Muslims argue that yes, Muslims are supposed to be violent, and some argue no, we're not supposed to be violent, but the Islam, and of course most Muslims in history and today also live what we would call normal, peaceful lives. They're just interested in the same thing that most Christians and Hindus and Sikhs and Parsis and Buddhists and atheists and everyone else is interested, which is getting a meal to eat every day and looking after their family. But terrorism in the world today is much associated with Islam, and there's an ideology behind it, which was formulated by Sayyid Qutb, who lived from 1906 to 1966, when he was hanged in his native country, Egypt, hanged to death, executed. So, in brief, his idea is that, as Ayatollah Khomeini put it succinctly, America is the great Satan, which really it really shocked and hurt the Americans to hear that, because they thought, well, we're nice people and we want democracy and freedom and we want everything to be nice for everyone. But Qutb's idea, his idea is that, well, the Western world, which is epitomized by America, the Western world with its freedom is fostering depravity. Depravity means base immorality. Free sex, especially, and also that the Western world, by trying to foist this on the rest of the world, is engaging in it's a continuation of the Crusades. That's what he put it. The Crusades came. I guess this lecture should be in the West, not in Tamil Nadu. But it affects us here also. We're discussing some Western ideologies which are influencing us here now, even though we may not be aware of it. So it is good to know about these things. So the Crusades were, how many were there? 13 were there? 13, 14, something like this. Over several hundred years, Christians marching off to the Holy Land, and the Holy Land means Palestine, to liberate Jerusalem from the infidels, which means the Muslims. So Christianity has historically been pitted against Islam. So Qutb saw this as the Western world, although it's not overtly Christian, but it's foisting itself on the Islamic world and spoiling Islam. And he has many more things to say also. But that's succinctly his idea. And therefore, Muslims should fight back and establish the real understanding, which is Islam. And people who die in this cause, they are glorious. Qutb himself, he was offered to get out of Egypt before he was executed. But he said, no, I'll stay and die. So that'll set a good example for others to follow in future. He didn't just talk, but he went the whole way with the conviction that Allah will be pleased. So the 9/11 bombers, if we believe the Orthodox version, and suicide bombers everywhere, they have the idea that they'll blow themselves up and blow many others up at the same time, and they'll wake up in paradise for having performed a pious deed of killing people. So there is an ideologist behind this. Oh, I didn't mention Buddhist terrorism. That's Buddhism is ahimsa paramo dharma. The greatest dharma is ahimsa, but there's also, well, not exactly terrorism, because the government in Sri Lanka is controlled by Buddhists, but the way some of the things they did in their war against the Tamils wasn't exactly in line with the Buddha's teachings. And recently in Myanmar, there's been attacks on the Muslim minority by the majority, which means Buddhists, including monks. So, interesting. That's another subject, how Buddhism is largely theoretical. So terrorism is largely associated in the minds of people with Islam. In minds of people means those who read the Western-controlled press. So I say it's not that all Muslims are terrorists, but there is a powerful strain of Islam that fuels this ideology. So if you really want to deal with the problem, it's not just having more heightened security, but you're going to have to convince people not to do that. So that's a very big task. How are you going to do that? Because just like here in India, how many madrasas in this country? Must be a few lakh, I would, maybe. Many thousands. And is it supervised what they're taught in there? Definitely in the madrasas, in madrasa, for the benefit of those who don't know, is an Islamic school. Young boys go for, and that's their education. You don't see them so much. I don't see it so much here in Tamil Nadu, but in North India, they're everywhere. Bengal. So they get trained in a completely an Islamicist worldview. I didn't say Islamic. There's another term, Islamicist. Islamist is a term that's recently coined. It means people who have this extreme approach. It's not traditional Islam, according to some scholars. Of course, all these things, you have to make generalizations, and they are generalizations, because the actual issues are very complex. And what to speak of there being different groups. I mean, every individual is different. So you can only speak in generalizations about all this. But all over the Islamic world, people are raised in Islamicist consciousness. Just like we're training young boys here in Krishna consciousness. But young boys in many madrasas, it seems they're being trained that from the beginning that Allah is pleased with you if you violently oppose everything else except our interpretation of Islam, which means other interpretations of Islam are also subject to terrorism. That's why most of the terrorism in the world is in Afghanistan and Pakistan, Muslims against Muslims. Because the followers of Qutb, they're against also Muslim, it means all Shias, and even Sunnis who don't believe what they believe. If they're not fully into what they believe is the way, the truth, and the light, then they're also subject to get sent to... Anyway, they're going to burn in hell forever, but they get sent there a little quicker by the grace of Islamicists. So... there's actually nothing that the West can do about this. Because if they try to preach against it, the only way you could try to sort this out at the roots is to introduce modern, liberal, secular education. But it's exactly that, or preach to people and tell them that actually this isn't very good and we should all be nice and good to each other. And we're all equal, although the Western world has never acted as if we were all, they don't act like that towards other countries. But even the attempt to introduce that will be seen as just a further attack on the Islamicism that the terrorists are indoctrinated in. The attempt by the Western secular, liberal, or if you say Christian Christian roots, ideology, persons who are indoctrinated in that, their attempt to indoctrinate Muslims in that will just be seen as a further reason to attack them. So the only way, I guess you could change this, or to stop these terrorist attacks, is just if everyone in the West becomes a hardcore Muslim. But I don't think that would stop it either, because then they'd argue, because they have that in their training, and they'd go on, then they'd just go on and on over some obscure doctrinal issue. The West has lost the war because they actually have nothing to say ideologically. I mean, they don't have anything to say to these people who are convinced that the West is decadent, because actually the West is decadent. There's no moral basis. In the view of any traditional outlook, which are mostly religious, the modern Western world is extremely decadent. Illicit sex is promoted. There's no proper understanding of family life. Women are extremely free. Now, this is a point which it's almost religiously held up by the West, that the women have to be given freedom. But in all traditional societies, that hasn't been allowed. That doesn't, as Srila Prabhupada points out, that doesn't mean that they're slaves, but they need protecting. And protection doesn't mean that you allow them to go around the streets alone, dressed sexually provocatively and drunk, and then there's supposed to be a policeman on every corner to protect them against rape. That's not protection. Protection means it begins with some codes of behavior which is going to minimize the problem. For a start, women's role is not to be sexually provocative in public, only with her husband in certain circumstances. And that sexual activity is meant to take place within marriage only. So the West, if it would face up to it, should see that it is decadent. The Islamists do have a valid point. Their solution or their response to it is terrible. It's horrible. But their point is that the whole Western society, which they're trying to force on us, that also is terrible and horrible. So, discussion, the idea that you bring people together and discuss, they don't want to discuss. They're just convinced that the terrorists are convinced that everything the West is doing is wrong. And what are you going to discuss with them? Even recently, the Afghani president, went to discuss with some Taliban people, and they killed him. So that's their discussion. Their analysis has some very valid points, but their solution is wrong. This has been termed as a clash of civilizations, but it's more a clash of ideologies. And from the Krishna conscious viewpoint, you may think, what am I giving this political speech here, or like political science speech here for? From our perspective, It's a clash of ideologies, both of which are based on ignorance. The West, on one hand, it somewhat admits its ignorance. It says that, well, you can't really know anything, we're doing research, science, we're finding out more and more about the world, but whatever we say, we know that it's subject to be revised. But on the other hand, they quietly say that while all the time actually pointing out that actually our society is so wonderful and you all need to have democracy, and if you don't have democracy, that's a good excuse to invade your country. And they act as if they really know what's going on. But and so they have some admission of ignorance, whereas the Islamicist promotes themselves as, we're right, we're right, we're right. And there's no discussion. It's not, there's... But like all the Abrahamic religions, which means Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, if you actually think about it, they have very big unanswered questions. Actually, in some ways, as Islam claims, it is an improvement on Christianity, in as much as the Christians claim that Jesus is God himself. So Islam, in many ways, it's very similar philosophy, but they left out this thing that Jesus is God. So it's somewhat of an improvement. And this Qutb, he made, I don't know how correct his analysis is, but it's an interesting analysis that Jesus, he didn't come to start a religion, and he upheld the Jewish law, which impacts every aspect of life. He upheld that more or less, but he was a reformer in as much as he wanted to get out some of the things which had been misinterpreted and misused in course of time. But then it was the Christians who, bringing Christ's teachings to the Gentiles, means the non-Jews, what happened was when the Roman Empire adopted Christianity, well, the Gentiles, they didn't take up the Jewish law because they thought it's nothing to do with us. And then especially when the Roman Empire adopted Christianity, in this way they brought in the ancient Greek philosophies, which are secular, and they dropped all these rules of life, so that Christianity is just some belief system, but it doesn't regulate life, and then therefore the whole of life is unregulated, whereas in Islam, it's not just a belief system, but it like that, it regulates every aspect of life. So that was another of Qutb's observations, which, as far as I know, from Wikipedia. But these Abrahamic religions, it means they all claim their original preceptor on this earth is Abraham. I mean, there are very big questions which the followers of those religions, it seems they never even ask them to themselves. And I know that because when I meet them and they try to convince me that I should become a Christian or a Muslim, whatever, I ask these questions and it's like they're just stumped, like they never thought of it before. Just like if Christians mostly, when I was in Bangladesh, I'd meet Muslims, but I didn't discuss with them much. It was not probably best not to, if you're in an Islamic country, not to get into too much discussion with fanatics. (Clears throat) But with Christians, many times I've asked, well, they said, well, if Jesus is the only way and you go to hell forever if you don't believe in Jesus, doesn't that show that God is being, he's unkind? He'll send you to hell forever? You say, well, no, he sent Jesus. And then they say, well, many people didn't hear of Jesus. If you're born in America, you're more likely to hear of Jesus than if you're born in Thailand. Does that mean God likes the Americans more than the Thais? And what about all the people who are born before Jesus? And they don't have any answer. It's like they become completely stumped and they never thought about it. So there, I mean, if anyone's even a little, I mean, I started thinking about these things when I was about 10 years old. But people go through their whole lives and they're intelligent people in many ways, but they never really think about these questions. I mean, there are severe ideological problems at the very basis of their whole thought system, which they want to, in many cases, they want to forcibly foist it on people. And the and because the Abrahamic religions, they have this idea that our way is the right way and everything else is wrong. And so they have the idea you have to conquer other peoples and subdue them and force them to take up their religion. So it is imbued in their system is a terroristic approach that we have to force it on others, and that that breeds historically that has bred so much violence, which many people say, although it's not exactly a very accurate statement, but many people say that, well, most of the wars in the world are caused by religion. So on one level that's true, although religion is often the excuse. Just like in Northern Ireland, for many years there was fighting going on between Protestants and Catholics, and it will go on again in future. It's latent, unless they all become enlightened in the meantime. But if you ask the Protestants and any normal, if you ask a Protestant who's throwing a bomb at a Catholic or a Catholic who's throwing a bomb at a Protestant, what are the actual theological differences between Protestantism and Catholicism, they wouldn't know. The only thing they know is that, well, we believe in the Pope and they don't, or vice versa. And what exactly it means to believe in the Pope. We accept the Pope. So, papist among Protestants, the papist is, it means a follower of the Pope. That's like the worst word. It's like, it's Satan's representative on earth. That's another funny idea they all got in these Abrahamic religion. There's Satan, who's the competitor of God. Yeah, it's actually very childish. It's unfortunate that these religions have become so prominent in the world and they're called bona fide religions. So, the advent or the specter of terrorism in the Western world, it could, for all its terror, something good could come out of this, apart from the camaraderie that arises between people after there's been a terrorist attack. Everyone, they kind of come together. Machiavellian politics is based on that. You make a common enemy and then everyone comes together. So in Boston, after the terrorist attack, all the people were feeling very together. But it's a terrible price to have some camaraderie. So some good could come out of it if the Western world was to take a good, hard look at itself and ask that, what are we doing? What's the basis of our civilization? Why are these people so upset with us that they're doing this to us? Do we need to reform at all? I would say more than reform. Reform means to take what you've got and put it in a different shape. But you need to start all over again. The West, the modern Western world, although it's semi-officially promoted as being the best society in history, it is decadent, confused, exploitive, and unhappy. And many people in the Western world would accept that now. But at the same time, they're so much convinced that, well, we have to have the freedom to have pornography and illicit sex, and they just can't see any alternative. And many people know that the whole economic system is exploiting them. Not so many people know that the educational system is just training them up to become exploited. Many people who are protesting, they cast it in a left wing versus right wing, or liberalism versus conservatism, in that kind of discourse. But either liberal or conservative, it's just different flavors of the same mistake. So you have to go deeper. Just being liberal in and of itself, be nice to others and hope that they'll be nice to you, that's not going to solve the problem. There is something very, very basically wrong with the whole of society. If you wanted to respond to the decadence of the West, then reinforce Christian values. You might say that. Well, that wouldn't stop the Muslim terrorists, because they think that Christianity is the problem. Either Christianity or the humanism, agnosticism, and atheism that's grown out of it. However much Richard Dawkins may protest, he can't escape the fact that his worldviews are inescapably shaped by the whole thought process that's been passed down in memes, as he calls them, from a society which is very strongly rooted in Christianity. So going back to Christianity, even from the point of the Islamic terrorists, won't solve a problem. But it in its the very reason, of course, here we have to speak in a simplified way again, but the very reason that the whole modern Western secular society arose was because of perceived and actual very deep problems with Christianity. The Renaissance, the Enlightenment, and what that's all come to be in the modern world. Now, scholars looking back at the Enlightenment, many of them think, well, maybe it wasn't so enlightened after all. But they don't perceive the real problem. We need a total rethink. That is our suggestion. Who will listen? Well, you're listening. I don't know who else is going to listen. Total rethink about what is the goal of life. Who are we? What are we doing here? We can align ourselves on one side of the fence, the anti-terrorist, or we can be pro-Islamicist. But both of them have the same. They both have very. Both of these thought systems. Or we can say, I'm not on either side. But as far as the Islamicists are concerned, you are on that side, and you're also eligible for bombing, being bombed to pieces. So, the concept of God in Judaism, or as Jesus, or as Allah, the concept of God is that we are humans and God has given us this world for us to enjoy. But, like Qutb says, you should enjoy it in somewhat regulated way. God's given us the world to enjoy, but according to the rules of Islam, not just profligately. So, there's a lot of problems with that. I mean, there's so many problems if we get into it. The whole idea that of linear time, it really doesn't make any sense that God created the world and then just out, for some reason or other, some people, those who believe in Wahhabi Islam, they get saved and everyone else goes to hell. Or those who believe in the Pope, they get saved and everyone else goes to hell. And it's just a singularity, as the Big Bangers would tell us, that God just created the world and then it's all over. There's the Day of Judgment and then it's all over forever. But if you consider eternity, then the whole thing, it's just a flash in time. So there's big problems with that. Why does God do that? Well, we don't know. You often get the answer, well, we don't know. God knows. It's beyond, but, well, maybe you need to take a postgraduate course in religion. Actually, maybe you need to start at kindergarten level. But that, it's not just that we're born as humans and then we're judged and we either go to heaven or hell forever. But we are eternal living beings and time goes on. There is the world is created, it's destroyed, again it's created, again it's destroyed. It's an ongoing thing. So, how can we stop terrorism? Well, we can say simplistically, introduce Krishna consciousness, but we have to introduce the understanding of who we are and what is the purpose of life. The Western ideologies, Christianity and anti-Christianity, and there are severe flaws with that. We see that Srila Prabhupada, what was the thing that he communicated to the public most of all? We are not the body, we are eternal, conscious, living beings. First of all, understand this. Get this right, then we can understand everything else. If you think, I am a human, Islamic human, and these are non-Islamic humans, or I'm a Catholic human, and this is a non-Catholic human. It's a mistake, because we are not intrinsically Catholic, non-Catholic. We're not even human intrinsically. Intrinsically, we're spiritual beings. And other living beings, they're also living beings, Atma. We are not the body. We are eternal living beings. Before this body came into existence, we existed. Before Jesus came, we existed. I wasn't, this body is 56 and a bit years old, if you calculate from the time it came out of the mother's womb, which is how they calculate in the Western world, which gives them a good excuse for abortion. But I existed before this body existed. You existed before that body existed. You are not the body. And nor is this world meant for us to enjoy. We have to communicate this to others and you get the understanding right and then we can get everything else right. It's just like so often there are misunderstandings, domestic misunderstandings. Husband fights with wife. And then if they just cool down a bit and then they can, I misunderstood you. And then everything's okay. I think we've all had this experience that we have a misunderstanding with someone And then we cool down a bit, and then we talk with them, and they say, oh, well, when you said that, I thought you meant this. No, no, actually, I was referring to something. I've had this experience of devotees being very upset with me. And I said, well, what are you so upset for? Well, you said this, this, this. Yeah, but I wasn't referring to you. I was talking. I said, oh, really? And then they just completely changed back to being normal. Otherwise, they're very upset with me because... I'll tell you one incident. It's nothing really to do with terrorism, but in Dhaka, Bangladesh, when I was the temple president of all three or four devotees there, I'd go to India and people would introduce me. He's the president of Bangladesh, which means I was the president of the ISKCON center in Bangladesh, which is about three or four devotees. So we had very few devotees, and there's only... So we'd often put some cassette of a class on in the morning, while we're cleaning or cooking or whatever, we'd hear that. So one morning I put on a cassette, and it started off with, right at the beginning, Achyutananda Swami said, shouting at the pujaris for something they'd done wrong. And... So, okay, it went on. And then after that, the pujari in the temple was very irritable with me. And after a few days, I said, well, you know why? He was being irritable with me. It's not Bangladeshi. It's from Western background. So I said, well, what's wrong with you? Why are you behaving like this? And he said, well, you did this and you did that, and then and you put that tape on, criticizing the pujaris. And I told him, Prabhu, I never heard that tape before in my life. I just stuck it on. I didn't know what was on there. He said, oh, really? Oh, then he was okay. He thought I'd put the tape on to criticize him. So just a misunderstanding. So if you get your understanding wrong, You can fight generation after generation over something which is just meaningless. So, we as representatives of Srila Prabhupada should not just be religious preachers or social workers, but we should, as Srila Prabhupada did, address the problems that face people and show that philosophically, and also by establishing communities based on Krishna consciousness, not based on megalomania of someone in the name of Krishna consciousness, or based on someone's psychological imbalance in which they want to, in the name of being Krishna conscious, exploit others or promote themselves. But if we establish actual Krishna conscious communities and show how life should be lived. Now, the Islamists, they also say something like that, but they got it seriously wrong. And that is seen in their terrorism. Srila Prabhupada, when he went to Chicago, he met with a police chief, and on the plane, Srila Prabhupada had seen the cover of Time magazine, Crime, Why and What to Do, because Time magazine was addressing the problem of increasing crime in America. So it's to the readers of Time, what you should do to, as an individual, to offset that. Time was offering their solution. And if you look back now, probably people think, oh, it's so good then, there was so less crime. But at that time, they were thinking, oh, the crime's increasing so much. But now it's probably increased so many times. So Srila Prabhupada addressed this issue. And he said to the policeman that you see, just like these disciples of mine, they were criminals, they were drug addicts, maybe not addicts, but they were drug users, which is illegal and your government is spending millions of dollars. But we're just taking people without any governmental support. And we're able to stop. We take people off drugs. Not only that, we make them first-class citizens in every way. That's what Srila Prabhupada said. But if we had governmental support, we should do so much. We could do so much more. So the government should support us. Srila Prabhupada is open. You know, as people think he's just some funny Swami from India with a few weirdo followers. But Prabhupada said, "Look, what we're doing. We're taking people who are antisocial, drug users, who are now have purposeful lives. They're happy. They're well behaved." You should help us. So, I often hear in the West that devotees say, well, you know, we have to make ourselves relevant to modern people, otherwise they won't take up Krishna consciousness. But their idea of being relevant is that you wear kami clothes, you have long hair, you blend in with modern society, and you don't talk about Krishna consciousness. Well, how is that relevant? It's irrelevant. The fact that you're secretly practicing Krishna consciousness, and that sometime, if you behave nicely with them, sometime they might think, oh, you're such a great saintly person. What's the secret? Actually, it did happen. I know in one case where in England, one devotee, he was selling paintings to support himself. And after he'd sold the paintings, the people he'd sold them to said, well, you seem to be very calm. What's your secret? And he said, well, I'm into Hare Krishna. And they became somewhat interested. It doesn't happen very often. I know about that because the person who asked him was the daughter of my cousin. And she said to him at that point, oh, one of my uncle or something, he's Hare Krishna. And then from the description, the devotee worked out that it was me. And it was. And I met her later on. So, as devotees, following Srila Prabhupada's example, should be relevant to modern society and giving solutions to problems like, or the problems that face modern society, the problems that people are concerned with. Abortion is a big issue in America. Very big issue, has been for years. Gun control is a big issue in America right now. Environmentalism is a big issue. So, Srila Prabhupada started this Back to Godhead magazine, and one of the points, he founded the magazine in India to address issues that are on people's minds, that people recognize there's a social problem. And what is the Krishna conscious solution? And to give some practical solution, not that we just deal with the religious crowd. We're Swamis and people are interested in that, they can come to us. But no, this is for everyone. Whether you're religious or irreligious, you have a problem with school shootings. You have a problem with terrorism. Okay, here's another perspective. That magazine was meant for promoting this, getting that out to the public so that they could see this philosophy and in practical terms as it relates to their life. As what devotees say, well, if we're dressed like this, in this funny way, then and we run around on the street ringing bells and singing, people are going to say, I don't want to be like that. They're never going to be interested in us, so we have to be more like them. But that wasn't Prabhupada's solution. His solution was to give them the philosophy and as it affects them, even if they're not spiritually interested. What are the issues? And there are so many. Ethical and moral issues. Euthanasia is another one. There are so many. And even if people are not particularly interested in ethics or morals, if there's some terrorist attack next door or themselves. They get their legs blown off. Of course, if they're killed, then there's nothing to discuss with them. But definitely if in Boston, even now, people must be affected. It's about less than 2 weeks after the attacks. But if we had a pamphlet, Terrorism, Why and What to Do, people would be interested. So it's, in one way you could say it's a hook to introduce our philosophy. That's what people say, you have to do bridge preaching, like introduce yoga, Ayurveda, astrology and all this. But on the other hand, we are supposed to be very concerned with the uplift of human society and solving its problems. We're not supposed to be just sitting in an ashram and chanting Hare Krishna and being happy by ourselves and doing a little preaching here and there and getting a little collection, and then a few people come along and they get initiated and Hari Bol. But no, we're supposed to be changing the world into a Krishna conscious world. So yeah, back to Godhead and personal preaching. Srila Prabhupada would meet with people, discuss with them. We are also supposed to meet with people and discuss these issues. If we are to discuss terrorism, then we're going to have to say, which, as I say, we're going to have to say something which Srila Prabhupada, he either avoided or he was very careful about, is that he didn't directly attack Christianity in public. But actually it's a fact, there are deep problems with their whole ideology. The whole idea that God gave the world to man to enjoy, and therefore you spoil the whole world ecologically and you kill all the animals. This PETA, People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, at one point they were promoting this, that actually Christianity is the problem behind all this animal torture and slaughter. But they decided to withdraw that stance because then it... I don't know exactly, but you can imagine, because it pitted them against a very powerful block of people. And then the issue tends to become political also, and then people can't hear your message because they just think you're wrong. You must be wrong if you're against Christianity. And I find that personally also, that within our society, when I try to speak about issues, that usually people, they don't even think about the issues, but just, well, you're criticizing, so you're wrong. So it's a difficult thing to deal with. But actually the Islamicist philosophy, Christian philosophy, humanist philosophy grew out of Christianity. They're all flawed because they have the idea that we're humans and we're here to enjoy. And even the Greens, the people who think that, well, we should see to the whole planet and all the different species and look, make sure that different species of bacteria don't, well, they don't worry about bacteria going extinct, but insects and birds, they're concerned about that. But they don't have any integrated philosophy. There's something like, I guess you could say, nature worshippers or something like that. But the actual philosophy is, yes, that God is in control. And what is that control? Ishava Siridam Sarvam. Everything is under the control of God. Ishava Siridam Sarvam Yadkin. What is it, the next line? Yadkinchit Jaga Changjagat. Tena Tyaktena Bhunjita Magritha Kasya Swidhanam. Yes, God is in control, and we do have an, He gives us some allocated quota, but we shouldn't take anything more than that. And then what is the purpose of life? We're not here to... The very idea that we're here to enjoy, or that God is there to facilitate our enjoyment, is a total misunderstanding of actual theology. If we are... Of course, we can't just go and tell that to people, but if we were to, in a neutral manner, study the different theological systems. And we would find that the Vaishnava system is by far superior to anything in the Western world. Actually, if we, in an open-minded way, study. That's if our devotees are going to go for interfaith conferences, they should say this. Why don't we study and see what are the different concepts of God? But even before that, about the term of God, but what is the purpose of life? That should be considered first of all. Otherwise, both sides will continue as terrorists. One major point that they never consider, the people who are against terrorism, which I often say, is that the whole Western world is fostering mass terrorism. But people don't define it like that. They're torturing and killing millions of animals every day. Plus, the abortion business. And in a more subtle way, that might be more difficult for people to understand, but actually the whole way of life is like a torture. Beginning with the watching the TV, violence on TV. What is that? Do you want to subject your children to that? Even cartoon violence. Why? Why that? So the whole ethos is one of terror means to illegitimately inflict pain on others. That could be one definition of it. There may be some reason to inflict pain. Just like acupressure is one method. It's you inflict pain, but it's not purposeless. It's benign inflicting of pain. That's one example. There should be a police force to catch and punish criminals. So that's legitimate violence, required violence. It's utopian to think that there should be no police force. And an army is required. Okay, that is, it's utopian to think that we can all just put flowers in our hair and strum a guitar and everything will be all peaceful. It's required to have a police force and an army. Okay, but unnecessary infliction of pain on others, that can be called terrorism. So the whole Western world is, I'm saying in Western world, but here in India, that practically the culture is following that also. Killing millions of animals. So there's the consciousness that goes with that will breed causing pain to humans, and the karmic effect. Now, scientists will say, well, there's no proof of karma. And you won't find proof by any laboratory experiments, that's a fact. But if you can accept it on the psychic level, on the subtle level, for every action, there is a reaction. You can't, under God's law, you can't inflict suffering on others without having suffering come back to you. So there will be terrorism for all these different reasons. So what can we do? Our little movement. Go on talking, as Prabhupada went on talking. They may not hear. You go on distributing the books. One by one, people are waking up. They read the books, they take to Krishna consciousness. But we have to set up communities also to demonstrate that. And we have to be convinced. We can't present Krishna consciousness as some kind of Indian religion that some people in the West follow as a quaint alternative to modern life. Or semi-alternative, because most of our people, they're fully committed to modern life in most ways. But that's not going to change the world. If we want to stop terrorism and abortion and grossly exploitive society, that's even deeper than terrorism. The problem is that of the whole exploitive spirit. then we're going to have to be a revolutionary movement. A revolution largely without guns. Like I said, when I said largely without, that means the armies, they're also required. That's if we are to have a Krishna conscious society, we'll also have an army. We don't see any sign of it now, but the point is that this is not a revolution. When we're talking about revolution, we're not talking about getting some guns and shooting or blowing people up, but raising people to a higher level of consciousness. Now, the New Agers, they talk about that a lot also. And yesterday in the doctor's office, I was reading a book, a New Age book about healing people's hearts by forgiveness. It's just from a completely different platform that we're on. And it helped to convince me more of the ultimate uselessness of all this. It may seem to be something very good because, all these years I'd been thinking of my husband like this, but now I realize I just forgive him, and then all the cancer goes away, and everything's nice. But wait a minute, you still didn't get the real purpose of life. It's all based on the understanding that me and my husband are supposed to, we're soulmates, and it's just completely mundane, actually. So raising consciousness means to Krishna consciousness. And what do we do? What do we do if people don't listen? Prabhupada said, we will go on preaching. We'll preach in the wilderness, we'll preach in the wind, we'll go on speaking, and Krishna will be pleased. We should go on speaking. What else should we do? Even if we think, what's the point? No one's going to listen to us. We have people, just like here in India, there are so many people, you don't have to talk all these things, you just talk, chant Hare Krishna and be happy, and there are enough pious Hindus who'll become devotees. So we have enough crowd, the religious crowd, and nice, pious people who'll become devotees. Just speak a little philosophy, a little listen, a little bhakti. Train them, have their kids learn some shlokas, and that's enough. There's no need to talk all this stuff, because anyway no one's listening. That wasn't what Srila Prabhupada didn't present himself exactly as a religious leader. He didn't fit, or rather put it in another way, he deliberately didn't place himself in the slot that people want to put you in of being a religious leader. But he spoke on issues that affect the world. He said, when he was asked, can you explain this religion? He said, it's not religion. He said, it's a philosophical, cultural and educational movement. So it's not religious, not in the normal sense that people want to put you in a box. Religion, okay, that's a religion. That's what you believe. Okay, that's all right. You be like that, and we can comfortably sit in a box, and we can go to the India in the embassy. And if we're in some country, we can go to the Indian embassy Republic Day celebration. They'll invite you. It happened to me in Burma years ago. I was in Rangoon, they invited me to the Republic Day celebration at the Indian embassy. So you fit in, you're Indian, you're Hindu, and you have your little box, but Srila Prabhupada didn't fit in that box, and he didn't want to get in that box. He's much too big for that box, and we shouldn't take Krishna's teachings and put them in a Hindu box, and then just file it away and forget it. No, take Bhagavad Gita, distribute it to Muslims. How about that? That's something. One thing we can do is to de-urbanize. That was another Prabhupada's problem. This terrorism works on people being all close together. But if they're all spread out in villages, then you can't do it, right? So you don't need huge cities with trains in which you can plant bombs and blow them up. In a village situation, there can't be terrorism as it's known, because if someone comes from outside, everyone will know who. You can't be anonymous. in the village. Terrorism works on anonymity. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to set up farm communities. There can be no terrorism unless, well, you have some kind of terrorism if someone wants to, you know, megalomaniacally control them. But then the whole community, there's no farm community like that, Manasham community. Okay, Hare Krishna. We should go on talking to put these points. Even if the people coming to us are here in India, many of the people we talk about this, they're not interested. What are you talking about? Lord Chaitanya's pastime. Okay, we do that sometimes, but like Prabhupada, he spoke a lot more on the issues that affect the world rather than some esoteric points which can be appreciated by a few people. Hare Krishna. Okay, that's all I had to say about that, unless there are any questions. You might brand it as a kind of terrorism that I always give these long classes and you're sitting there waiting for the end. When's it going to finish? Time for prasadam. Okay, no questions. What's up? What's this? You're looking for the one with the Urdu Bhagavad Gita? Yeah. Bhagavad Gita is now re-released here in India in Urdu. But it's not so much, there's not much to say about it in Tamil Nadu because there are not many Urdu. Even the Muslims here, they read in Tamil. Well, it's going out, yeah. Yeah, distribute Bhagavad Gita in Urdu. That's mostly in North India and in Pakistan. Urdu language. Urdu is the language of which people? Sindhis, Punjabis, it doesn't belong to any people. It's a put-together language, which... It's the national language of Pakistan, but it's not the ethnic language of anybody. But in all of North India and Pakistan, the Muslims, for most of them, Urdu is their first language. It's one of the state languages in UP. You'll see all the signs are written. It's road signs are there in English, Hindi, and Urdu. And in Delhi also, they have English, Hindi, Urdu, and Punjabi. And yes, it's the national language of Pakistan. So there are many Muslims in India we can distribute Bhagavad Gita in Urdu to. And it's not that all Muslims are completely against it either. That's another piece of wrong propaganda. Yes.
Varadaraj Prabhu said 2 days ago, in Navakal, 20 subscriptions for Bhagavad Darshan from Muslim families.
I see. 20 subscriptions to Tamil Bhagavad Darshan in Namakkal from Muslim families. Very good. Yeah, in Gujarat also, we have Muslim subscribers. And they write in afterwards and say, we appreciate. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're thinking we're going to convert them. I don't see that Srila Prabhupada talked in those terms, but he would often say that you can become a better Muslim, a better Christian like this, by taking this knowledge. Of course, if someone from a Muslim background wanted to take up Krishna consciousness fully, Srila Prabhupada would accept that also. One of the devotees I used to go out regularly with on Bhakti Shushan in London was from Turkey, from Muslim background. So, if they want to, okay. It may be socially very difficult for them to do so. Ideologically, it may be difficult for them to do so because they're so used to that. Amoghalila Prabhu, who was born in India to missionaries, I believe, from America and became Prabhupada's disciple. So he grew up knowing his Western body, but he grew up knowing Hindi, which is very similar to Urdu. So he was instrumental in promoting our preaching in Pakistan. So I was going to say something that... Oh yeah, he told me that in Pakistan, it's another whole entity. There's Sindh and there's Punjab, and they're very different people. And Punjabis, even though they're not the majority, Sindh, Punjab, Balochistan, and the Pashtun area. I think there's just four states, I'm not sure. But the two major population areas are Punjab and Sindh. So Punjab is the smaller state and less population, but they tend to dominate everything in Pakistan. And this whole Bhutto thing, I mean, because it's not just the politics, but it's Sindhis versus Punjabi and all. Anyway, he told me there are several Muslims that he knows of in Pakistan who are chanting 16 rounds, educated people, but they're completely secret about it. They're outside, they're Muslims, but at home, and maybe not even known to their families, but they're devotees. In Sindh, you could probably do it to some extent openly, because they're different people, they're more open like that. And even their whole culture is traditionally been one of... is it Islam in India? In many ways, it blended with what we now call Hinduism. So many of the Muslims, they were actually in many ways Hindus still. Anyway, it's a big discussion. So, but my point is that many Muslims, they're very open to what we call Hinduism. And if it's presented, and they'll appreciate many of the things we say, that a man cannot be God. They appreciate that very much. And another thing, another way we can preach, a very powerful platform of preaching, presenting Krishna consciousness to people who consider themselves to be other religions, is the four pillars of religion. Daya, mercy. Satya, truthfulness. Then Swachata, cleanliness. And Tapasya, austerity. These are any religion. You can see how developed it is according to the level of how much it has developed. Austerity, mercy, truthfulness, and cleanliness. And everyone will agree until you start discussing the details of mercy, and then you're killing animals is not merciful. But on principle, everyone will accept that. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.